What do you make of these elections, Lee?
It's kind of interesting. You know, a lot of times there's the power in the incumbency, but there's been a few cases where that didn't work, like with Mark Sanford and Phyllis Henderson.
Absolutely. And, you know, for some good reasons. I mean, Mark Sanford has been nothing but a thorn in Trump's side.
True. And he has been recalcitrant, to say the least, in his tenure, you know, particularly during the Trump administration, trying to distance himself from it. And just, you know, it's time's up. It's going to be over.
I think what happened, and I heard a lot about this, you know, when I was in Charleston because I was there during that race, is that when he, this is just my theory on him, and I actually know Mark Sanford really well, surprisingly. I was the one who talked him into running in the first place for that seat, which I now apologize profusely for. I thought I was getting the Mark Sanford from the letting the pigs go
day. Yeah.
Yeah, and
no, we get that.
And I got his straight-up cell phone number from a source, and, you know, the rumor was that he was planning on running. And so I wanted to see if could I get him on the show, on my show in Charleston. So I called the cell phone number up, and you know, just to see, hey, you know, are you going to make it? You can make an announcement. What's going on? You come on the show if you're going to announce. What are you going to do? And he goes, I don't know what I'm going to do. And then he says to me, what should I do? Okay, I don't know this guy. I shook his hand one time at something. I don't know, like years before. I don't know him. He's like, what should I do?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm upstairs in the kids' playroom, sitting on the floor for like 2 hours. I helped him make a pro and con list about whether to run. And my husband finally comes up, like, who are you talking to? What are you talking about?
Oh, God.
You know, like, he's just curious. Like, what the heck is this? And I sat there and hashed out with him.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, you know, you still have your conservative bona fides. You've got that. You know, you've got a lot of baggage and stuff like that. But people know you. They trust you. And, you know, I said, listen, if you're not going to take this chance, you know, because he was afraid of how it might hurt his family to drag all the dirt back up, yeah, you know, that him running. And I said, yeah, but you're never going to have a chance to right the ship. If you don't take this chance, you're always going to go down as what you were, and that's going to be a stain on them, too. You know, so he went back and forth, and he decided by the end of the phone call to run. I talked him into it.
There you go.
Which is crazy.
And the rest is history.
And so when he went up there to Congress, one of the things that I was hearing, and I stayed in touch with him for a long time, one of the things that I was hearing from Mark about Mark was that the GOP leadership absolutely spurned him because of his, you know, the hiking,
yeah, right,
on the Appalachian Trail and all that. I mean, they didn't want him as part of the, you know, Republican,
right,
Party. They thought he was going to be,
yeah,
a liability the Democrats could point to.
Right.
So they wanted to shove him in a closet somewhere. And so that he attempted basically to get the leadership in an IOU position. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right,
being there with them, voting with them, doing the Never Trump stuff, saying the Never Trump stuff. And in order to sort of get himself back on solid footing. And he just lost his mind up there. I mean, he just lost his mind. I don't know who he became. He was a deep, deep, deep disappointment to me.
Well, he's always been very nebulous. He's a very, very intelligent man.
Yes, he is.
And has a real grasp of fiscal policy and economics and politics in South Carolina. And I you know, there's a part of me that really likes him, but he can tend to be a little bit odd and go off on tangents on stuff that is like, where are you going with this?
Exactly. But he had a great record. I thought,
yeah,
he could be dependable if we sent him,
yeah,
up there, right?
And quite honestly, I think he was a good representative for South Carolina during the Obama administration,
yes,
where you're fighting against a Democrat president. But obviously, he's not necessarily what the people of that district are looking for when we have a Republican president.
No, and they go up there and it just changes them, Lee. And, you know, I mean, it just changes them.
Well, if you look at his voting record, I don't think he changed that much. I think that the circumstances have changed and the expectations have changed. And the people of South Carolina who helped elect Donald Trump president expect to see a Republican up there supporting the president, not fighting against him. So, like I said, it was easy for Sanford to be who he was during with a Democrat, you know, in the White House. It became much harder for him to do so with his look and his perspective on things once Trump was in there.
Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know what he was thinking, but he really bet on the wrong side.
Yeah.
And here's one example where you're right. Sanford voted no on the omnibus. That's mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah.
So, you know, still definitely doing that kind of stuff, but undermining President Trump all the way. And
right.
That's just not a good move. So that's kind of where he ended up. And that's a shame because it didn't have to be that way.
And it'll be interesting to see if he continues to have any influence or position within South Carolina national politics.
I doubt it. He was barely tolerated even during that race. The grassroots, still, a lot of grassroots still liked him because they remembered the fiscal conservatism and were willing to overlook the thing with the fiance. So,
yeah.
This is unbelievable what is going on today as you look at Washington. Those subpoenaed, mind you, from Congress. Okay, when Congress asks you for something, they oversee the Department of Justice. Okay, they answer to Congress.
Right.
Okay, if Congress wanted to abolish the Department of Justice with a vote tomorrow, they could.
Mm-hmm.
They are totally Congress's animal to do with what they want. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, the number two at the Department of Justice, threatened to subpoena emails, phone records, and other documents from lawmakers and staff because the Republicans dared to ask for the records that are required for them to oversee the agency. During a tense meeting earlier this year, this has been reported on multiple times, mm-hmm. Lee. I mean, I've been talking about that for a while. This is not new news. They just have a new source on it.
Right.
They said it was described as a personal attack. He said, I'm going to go get your emails. I'm going to get your stuff if you want to ask us for stuff. Whoa. It's Congress's job to oversee the Department of Justice.
Yeah. And they have every constitutional right to request that information.
Mm-hmm.
And for that person to then turn around and try to bully, and basically it's a form of extortion.
Yes.
You know, you're
it's
threatening.
A threat.
Yeah, exactly. You're threatening the people that you are to answer to with, well, I'm going to you try and dig up dirt on me, I'm going to dig up dirt on you.
That's exactly what that was.
Yeah.
That is exactly what that was. And, you know, I get so many texts from people saying, hey, you know, what do they have on so-and-so that they're behaving this way? Well, everybody in Congress knows about that threat. Don't they?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. They don't need to subpoena anything. They just go 702 on the computer. Pull it up. Go get Samantha Power to pull a couple hundred more. Why don't you do that? They have access to this mm-hmm. stuff. They don't even need a subpoena. But if they wanted one, they just go lie to the FISA court. I'm sure the FISA court will continue handing them out like candy if they wanted them. This is just absolutely disgusting that he would threaten them with this, but it shows you the absolute power struggle going on in our country right now. This is a constitutional crisis. And then you have Rip Van Sessions up there, head of the Department of Justice. I mean, you've got multiple sources saying this happened in this meeting, and Sessions like, oh, well, I'm sure Rod Rosenstein's telling the truth. I'm sure he is. Now, why would Rod Rosenstein threaten Congress members this way? Well, because Rosenstein is one of the five people we know, thanks to Devin Nunes, broke the law with that FISA application. At least five federal statutes were broken with that FISA application. We know that for a fact. Nobody cares, but we know it. And so Rod Rosenstein has every reason to make sure this information doesn't get out because he could end up in prison. And you have a guy who is literally prosecutable at the head of the DOJ because Rip Van Sessions is, you know, rolled over and gone back to sleep. And he is threatening members of Congress who are trying to get to the bottom of crimes, potential crimes that he had a direct part in. Think about that. We literally have a criminal running the Department of Justice right now. And he's running it as if it were a co-equal branch of Congress, not subject to any kind of oversight by the other branches. Stunning.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I could tell, nobody doing anything about that.
The deep state deepens.
Yep, the deep state deepens. So when you see certain members of Congress do inexplicable things in defense of the FBI and the DOJ, things that, you know, come out and make statements that contradict all available factual evidence, so much so that it's like somebody telling the sky's red when you're looking at it and it's blue. Ask yourself this. What are they afraid of? What are they afraid of the deep state doing to them personally? It is now, Lee, and this is scary, a legitimate question in this country. It's a legitimate question. What do they have on members of Congress? Do you see this? Let me tell you what's driving this. We've heard a lot about the crumbs, you know, the individual tax cut. Maybe you got a couple hundred or maybe, a couple hundred to a couple $1,000 more a year. Maybe you didn't even get that as an individual, but nobody's talking about the massive corporate tax cut we just had. It was huge. Now, we haven't gone as low as socialist countries like Canada, which has an 18% corporate tax rate. We're not going to get that radical, right? But just the level of the tax cut that we had, Listen to this. Small business optimism soared in May to its highest level in 34 years, with some components hitting all-time highs, the National Federation of Independent Businesses said Tuesday. The NFIB's Small Business Optimism Index rose 3 points in May to a reading of 107.8, its second highest level in 45 years, and the strongest level of recovery. Economists are expecting the index to rise to 105 from 104. The May reading was just under the 1983 reading of 108. So that's small business optimism at the highest level in 34 years. Several measures of business optimism hit the levels highest levels ever recorded. Plans for business expansion, reports of positive earnings trends, and compensation increases broke new records. Let me tell you how business works here. I know, my husband owns one. When you are optimistic about the future, what do you do? Well, they tell us right here. Several measures hit the highest levels ever recorded. Plans for business expansion among them. What do you do when you expand a business? Most of the time, what do? You hire. You hire people. You're going to have a bigger business. You need more help. Need more help? So tell us here. Oh, look, see, I didn't even know it was on the next line. Plans for business expansion at record high levels. Compensation increases broke new records. What happens when you plan to expand your business? You hire. What happens when you hire? Less competition. More jobs. Compensation goes up. Expectations for strong increases in sales reached their highest level since 1995. This is the tax cut working at the corporate level, folks. Corporations invest in people all the time. It grows our GDP in a way that the federal government never will be able to. That's so exciting. There's so much opportunity there. Small business owners are continuing an 18-month streak of unprecedented optimism, which is leading to more hiring and rising, you know, raising wages. NFIB chief economist Bill Dunkelberg said. So there you go. That's, imagine if we were to cut our corporate taxes down to the Canadian business level. The socialist, because Canada is, it's a socialist country. Canada, the socialist Canadian level. What we could do. This is just super exciting. It's just, it is. I mean, and this is what you get, too, when you slash regulation like Trump has. It's super exciting. And I mean, I can't say enough about it. We have to keep control of the House, no matter what the Republicans are trying to do to lose it with this whole amnesty, shamnesty stuff they were waiting to right before the midterms to push so we could lose the House. Good morning. What'd you think of the election results? 800-347-1063 if you're just waking up this morning. Looks like it's going to be a runoff for governor in the Republican primary between Henry McMaster, 42.4% of the vote, and John Warren, who came in with 27.7% of the vote. He whooped Catherine Templeton. She was behind him with 21.4% of the vote. You know what was interesting? You should look at the breakdown of this. The reason that John Warren was able to beat Catherine Templeton, most of the roughly 23,000 votes that separate them came out of Greenville County and Pickens County. John Warren won Greenville County running away. And I mean, not surprised, he's from here. He got 46% of the vote here to Henry McMaster's 26%. Catherine Templeton did not play well here, 15% of the vote. So that she went over like a lead balloon here. And then you look at that. So John Warren, by the way, only carried two counties in the entire state. John Warren also carried Pickens. He got 36% of the vote there. Henry McMaster got 35. Henry McMaster carried every other county in the state, except like Yancey McGill's home county. Catherine Templeton did just barely win Charleston. And she just barely won Beaufort County. So she didn't even do that well in her own stomping ground where she's from, which is kind of interesting. She picked up Edgefield County, and she also picked up McCormick County. You know what's really interesting? Do you look at where Nikki Haley's from, Lexington County? You would think, because she's running, you know, she's essentially running for Nikki Haley's third term. She came in third there. She got crushed using the Nikki Haley thing. Love to know what you think about all this. Yeah, Catherine Templeton's message never made any sense to me. I mean, it actually started to grate me after a while. And I'll tell you why, because she would say in the same, you know, breath, I'm the outsider. I'm going to Columbia to straighten stuff up. And I have the, you know, I have the experience to do it because I worked in Columbia for so many years. I mean, it didn't make any sense. I worked in state government, but I'm an outsider. Either you're an outsider or you worked in state government. Which is it? Well, I work with Nikki Haley. Okay, so you're not an outsider. She's an insider. I mean, which one is it? And she really, I thought she way overplayed the Haley thing. I mean, I might have been okay with a little of it since she's endorsed with Haley. But I mean, and then when you know, when you vote against Nikki Haley for a Democrat and then spend the rest of your time telling us how much Nikki Haley loves you, I mean, that's kind of bizarre, too. The whole thing, just the message, I don't know who crafted it. It didn't make a lot of sense. You're either an outsider or you're not. And the other thing that was weird to me, she just relied so heavily on Nikki Haley. When, you know, Nikki Haley had kind of gotten on folks' nerves toward the end there a little bit with the, you know, with the whole Confederate flag thing, taking that down. She became a media darling for doing it. And then, you know, using her State of the Union address rebuttal to Obama, which is traditionally used to make Republican talking points. She used it to trash Trump. And the other thing I didn't get about Catherine Templeton either, that didn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, you're a big part of your campaign is Nikki Haley loves me and endorses me. That has not worked out well for anybody. Everybody Nikki Haley endorses in the state goes down in flames. I don't know why. I mean, look at Donna Cox, down in flames. She endorsed Mitt Romney and campaigned for him. Newt Gingrich stomped him. Nikki Haley endorsed Marco Rubio. Remember, they were running around South Carolina. A bunch of them were even on the front page of Time magazine. Rubio went down in flames. Trump won almost every county in the state. So, I mean, the idea that Nikki Haley could suddenly push somebody over in the state, I don't know where that came from. Dan in Simpsonville, good morning. What do you think, Dan?
Hi, Tara. I love the election results from last night. If you look at the candidates who supported or were supported by the establishment Republicans, the Nikki Haley's, Rubio's, Bush family, Romney groups, they all went down, I would say, at least locally.
Yes.
You had the DACA-supporting, tax-raising establishment Republican in Josh Kimbrell. He went down.
Yep.
And you look at Templeton, who's a Democrat, but she campaigned for Jeb and all this sort of stuff, and she went down. I mean, she didn't even get to the runoff. And she was an early, entry into the race. So she had the longest time to campaign and get her message out there, and she still went down in flames.
Great point.
I don't think Nikki Haley is as popular as she thinks she is, or outsiders from outside the state don't realize how unpopular she is. With all the outside money coming in from Club for Growth and everything, and then I just don't think that they still don't know who the Trump supporters are. We've seen now that if you show up to vote, you can get these people out. And I hope that in the general for everybody in the runoff, that people show up and they vote these people out that are the incumbents or are not conservative-minded individuals.
You made great points there, Dan. And, you know, once I found out that America Future Fund was running ads for Templeton, I mean, a lot of those ads that they ran for her, I mean, it was a lot of the ads running on the air for her. I mean, that is, according to OpenSecrets.org, which is a very trustworthy nonpartisan site that reports on donations and groups and who runs them. I mean, that is one of the top three, political organizations of the Republican establishment in Washington. I mean, so this was a bid by the Jeb Bush, Karl Rove, Nikki Haley, Mitt Romney, Paul Ryan, wing of the party to take over the state and to put it in their column. And I think they backed her so strongly, Dan, because Trump backed McMaster so strongly. And this was a real battle between Trump and the establishment fought out in our primary. And I don't even know outside of the upstate and, you know, our reporting on it, anybody even knows that. But she still went down. People figured it out. I think they had a sense of it, even if they didn't know all the details.
Well, I just couldn't be happier for Lee Bright in that race. Being from Greenville County, I could never vote for him because he was in Spartanburg. Another reason why I'm glad Josh Kimbrell went down because he didn't back Lee Bright in his failed attempt to win re-election, and Josh Kimbrell pretty much backed the challenger, who was a tool of the Chamber of Commerce, and did exactly what everyone warned everyone he would do, and that was vote for a gas tax increase. So, once again, the establishment wing of the party, I think, really suffered, especially in the upstate last night, and I was very happy to see that, considering we're supposedly the conservative epicenter of South Carolina. So it was a great night.
I thought it was, too. I was really happy with a lot of it, Dan. Thank you for your phone call. Texter writes, did John Warren fund his own campaign? Yes, he did. By the way, do you know who McMaster did an interview with yesterday when he could have been on the show? Breitbart. He's talking to Breitbart National. He could be talking to you. And he chose not to. Unbelievable. I just unbelievable. Talking about the elections last night, you know what's interesting? It's looking like our last caller, Dan, kind of pointed this out. It's looking like this whole outsider thing. Throw the insider out, throw those out who don't support Trump. That kind of thing was not a fad. That this is becoming a permanent part of the way we think politically. Now, there's sort of this political awakening of, I always vote Republican, or, you know, to, I don't vote for most of these Republicans. I'm going to take a real good look at these Republicans, make sure they're not Democrats. It's kind of a greater scrutiny, if you will. And people are beginning to be able to pick it out. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. It's a subtle difference, but it's one I've not seen before. Trump ran, and I'm glad to see it's still alive, in the primaries yesterday. Jimmy in Spartanburg, got about a minute here. What do you think, Jimmy?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I watch a lot of sports, and I can, you know, tell you what player, what stats, why not. And so since I've been listening to y'all, I've become more political savvy. I know the players of the game now.
Mm-hmm.
And my roommate does not pay attention to it. And I told her that Catherine Tiffany is not going to win because she's basically tagging herself with Nikki Haley, and nobody likes Nikki Haley anymore.
And you were right.
She didn't do any great research on the ground to find out, like, nobody likes her anymore.
Yeah, good point. And you know what? Here's the thing. You know why politicians make mistakes like that? Because they're insular. She and her husband make combined $1 million a year. They got state contracts. They run in those circles. Nothing wrong with that. But you know what? They don't rub shoulders with people like you, Jimmy. And so
exactly. They
don't know how to craft a message that appeals to you. And neither do the people they hire, because those people run in the same circles.
Yeah. And I also want to say to Lindsey Graham, better pay attention last night because of Mark Sanford going down.
Mm-hmm.
That's a shot over his bow.
Yep. It sure is. It sure is. He ought to pay attention to that.